Good morning, everybody. My name is Dave Valguth, and I'm your lay worship leader this morning. And I was asked to provide a reflection regarding resilience and come what may. And right now, we've all been dealing with a lot of stuff that you need resilience in order to just make it through your daily lives. And I know I've shared in the past about some things I was able to do athletically before I got hurt, and like winning punt, pass, and kick, and hitting a home run, knowing what it feels like to do a lot of those things. So I feel very fortunate. What I haven't shared is what happened the day of my accident. And I really believe that I'm a good example of someone who has been resilient, or know what it's like to have to be resilient dealing with what I've dealt with. And it was June 12th, 1979. Just a few days after eighth grade let out for the summer, and a bunch of my friends and I, we biked out to Plowman Park, which is north of Appleton a little bit. Lived on the north side of town, so we just biked out there, something we had done many times summers before. And we set up our area up at the top of the hill. There's a fence that goes all the way around it. Halfway down is grass, halfway down is sand. And a bunch of friends and I raced from the top of the hill, ran down into the water. When we got into the water a certain distance, we dove in. And when I dove, my head hit the bottom of the pool, the sandy pool, and just fluke thing, hit it the wrong way, and that was it. Went into shock right away, and then I woke up in the ambulance on the way to the hospital with my brother next to me. He was the head lifeguard at the pool that day, and that's where my necessity to be resilient began. It didn't happen right away. I was very unresilient for 4 years before I had an epiphany and realized that I had to stop feeling sorry for myself, and if I was going to make anything of myself, I had to go to school and leave home. And looking back, it was the best thing that I did for myself. And I've had to deal with a lot of resilience since then, being told that, you know, you're not going to be able to have kids, and I've got two girls. You're not going to be able to work, and I've been full-time employed for over 30 years. You can't, you know, expect to drive, and I drive just fine. I've driven since I was 16 without any accidents and a couple speeding tickets, but the job market is another place I've had to be resilient, knowing I'm qualified or better qualified than other people that have gotten jobs in front of me. I've had to be resilient looking at sports on TV because, you know, I used to do those and I feel I should be on there. And watching the news every day, you know, just seeing what people are getting away with or trying to get away with, it really is staggering, and it just keeps continuing. So your ability to be resilient has to, you know, increase, because, you know, just the news that comes at you and what's happening in society and politics, and in the long run, it'll make you a tougher, stronger person. With COVID-19, as humans, we've had to deal with plagues and viruses and flus in the past that have taken many more than the COVID-19 has taken. doesn't make it any less serious, but it's been less than a year, and we've already been able to come out with a vaccine. Hopefully we'll all have had that, or at least the opportunity to get it within the coming months, and we can all be together again. So be resilient, be strong. Things will improve. But I'm an example of what some resilience can do. It pays off in the end.
Thank you so much, Dave, for sharing your story and your insights with all of us. Thank you. And right now, I'd like to invite us all into another breath together. You know, before pursuing a career in the ministry, I was actually a middle school math teacher. And I know that we have plenty of current and former teachers here at the fellowship, so I probably don't need to say any of this, but for those of you who may not know, the first year of teaching is brutal. Brutal. It just is, for so many reasons, and mine was no different. I taught at a startup charter school in a city in New Jersey, and if I'm honest, every day just felt like a new chaos that I could not have predicted. Some of my most vivid memories of the time are actually the mornings before school. I always made it a point to get to the building way before the start of the school day, because I knew that once students started arriving for breakfast, the day would just feel like an avalanche of student needs and administrative needs and unexpected problems and new challenges and heartaches and struggles. I got there early to prepare, to brace myself for that avalanche, to batten down the hatches of my classroom, if you will. It was always me and our beloved custodian, Felix, who would enter together in the darkness of the early morning and turn on the first lights of the building together. Now, this will sound silly, but what I remember mostly doing during those early mornings was actually sharpening pencils. You see, if I had enough sharpened pencils on hand, I would be ready for when a student forgot their pencil, or for when a student broke their pencil, or I'd be ready to intercept the student who wanted to use the trip to the pencil sharpener as an opportunity to talk with his friend across the room instead of working on his lesson. I'd be ready for that student who wanted to see what would happen if you stuff drinking straws into an electric pencil sharpener hard enough. Spoiler alert, it breaks. I loved my students, but middle school is a tough and confusing age for kids, and I struggled to manage my classroom and to teach a successful lesson that first year. Sharpening pencils was at least one little thing that I could do to avoid some problems. And so that's what I did. I sharpened pencils as if they were like little swords to ward off whatever crises were to come. I battened down the hatches for the avalanche. Every morning, Felix would come interrupt my pencil sharpening to let me know that the sun was rising. He insisted that I come with him to these big floor-to-ceiling windows that our building had. He would say, "Peters, this is the most beautiful sunrise. You can't miss it." He said that about all the sunrises. And I would come to the window with him, mostly just to appease him. But as he gazed with wonder out at the colors in the sky, I would stand there impatiently, thinking about everything that I should be doing in my classroom. All those pencils that needed sharpening. American psychologist and author and Buddhist practitioner, Tara Brach, she explains that when we're in times of stress and trying to anticipate what's around the corner, it is so easy for many of us to slip into what she calls the over-controller, the impulse in us that is preoccupied with human doing rather than human being. The over-controller is preoccupied with the pencils that should be sharpened, and it keeps her from experiencing the sunrise. My obsession with trying to do so many things to prepare did not make me a good teacher. It didn't help me handle anything. It fed my stress, it exhausted me, and the kicker is that no matter how many pencils I sharpened, that avalanche still came, and I still didn't feel able to handle it. The unexpected stuff still felt unexpected. The hard stuff still felt hard. The scary stuff still felt scary. Tara Brach elaborates a little bit more about the over-controller, pointing out that the result of regular overdoing is chronic fatigue, even exhaustion. There is no room to breathe, no rest. We lose our access to our own creativity and natural intelligence. We can't feel our own loneliness or sadness or yearning because the over-controller is not living in the present moment. I've been thinking a lot about this over-controller impulse lately. This past year has been its own series of avalanches, hasn't it? It's so easy for us to look for some sort of solid ground, something we can use to brace ourselves, some pencils to sharpen, some way to batten down the hatches in anticipation for whatever might be around the corner that we can't see. But this morning, we're reminded by Dave's words that resilience does not actually rely on preparation. It's often in spite of events that we just could not have seen coming. And in our reading, Mark Nepo points out that too much focus on preparation for what's to come can ironically stand in the way of our ability to take on whatever it is that does come, whether bad or good. Rather than steadying us on solid ground, our desire to be ready for the future will always work against us if it keeps us from being able to meet the present moment. If it keeps us from taking care of our hearts and our spirits right now, if it serves as a placeholder for feeling those tough feelings that arise in us, feelings that need to be experienced and felt and metabolized so that they can move through us and so that we can move forward with clarity and with purpose. This past week, our country survived an attempted coup. a terrorist attack on our Capitol at the hands of a large group of white American citizens. It is so natural to worry about what this means for us or what's ahead. That pit in our stomachs reminding us that this wasn't an isolated incident. The panic search for some solid ground. What comes next? What should we all expect? What can we do? And so I invite us to pause, to breathe, and to honor the feelings that are arising in us. Because what happened at the Capitol on Wednesday was scary. I can't speak for you, but I know that I've been feeling confusion and anger and fear among a whole tangle of other feelings I probably have yet to name. You know, seeing the word terrorist so much in the past few days actually has me thinking quite a bit back to 9/11. After the World Trade Center attacks that day, our country's leaders responded by going to war. We weren't given a chance to pause, to truly grieve together as a nation, to process our devastation and our fears in community, to breathe and regroup so that we could move forward with that clarity and purpose. Instead, the doer came out, the over-controller. And so our country sharpened its pencils, battened down its hatches, prepared a show of force toward an entire part of the world, entire races of people. A clumsy response that distracted our nation from all of the grief and fear and devastation. In her book, See No Stranger, a memoir and manifesto of revolutionary love, Sikh activist and civil rights lawyer Valerie Kaur draws a clear thread from that moment after 9/11 to the poisonous displays of white nationalism that we've seen blooming in very recent years. The same white nationalism that we saw assaulting our Capitol on Wednesday. Trauma that goes ignored. Pain and anxiety that does not get honored and felt and metabolized can linger and fester and grow and spill out in devastating ways. So then how do we prepare ourselves to meet whatever unexpected things may come in the future? Well, first we breathe. We sit with feelings that come up with us, come up in us. We tend to those feelings, the bad and the good, the grief and the joy, the fear and the hope. We take care of our hearts and our spirits. We take care of the hearts and the spirits of our communities. We hold each other, even from a distance. We make our way forward together with clarity and purpose. And we learn to trust our own resilience. Come what may. May it be so, and amen.